would Brian Boitano do if he was here right now? He'd make a plan and he'd follow through. That's what Brian Boitano do.
When Brian Boitano was in the Olympics skating for the gold, he did 2 sow cows and a triple lutz while wearing a blindfold.
When Brian Boitano was in the Alps fighting grizzly bears, he used his magical fire breath and saved the maidens there. So what would Brian Boitano do if he were here today? I'm sure he'd kick an ass or two. That's what Brian Boitano do.
Hey folks, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Surprising for the so-called off season, but we've got all sorts of stuff. We had an amazing, rousing victory over the hated Kansas Jayhawks by the Texas basketball team. We've got Super Bowl to talk about. We've got some of the intrigue happening on the plains of Alabama, and that's Auburn with our old UT offensive coordinator Brian Harsin. Kevin's going to have some good insight on that one. And then I want to actually start us off talking a little bit about the Olympics.
All right. I thought you weren't going to watch.
Well, I'm making a point of not really watching, actually, along with the rest of the world. And I think NBC is going to have a lot of egg on their face over this. And to their credit, there have been a couple of individual journalists who have spoken out about some of the things that are obvious, and I don't just talk, not just geopolitical, but some of the things that are happening at the actual Olympic Games, where athletes are being segregated and sort of fed substandard diets under the guise of COVID protocols, in the hope of helping Chinese athletes. You've had some really bizarre contests that have been overturned and disqualifications in which Chinese athletes have been involved, most notably against the South Koreans. And I'm not surprised by any of it, but, you know, the opening ceremonies, Kevin, were the least watched opening ceremonies for Winter Olympics since they had national broadcasting. And that includes both streaming platforms. If you add all of them in aggregate, 16 million people tuned in. In South Korea, 4 years before, 28.3 million people tuned in to watch the opening of the Winter Olympics.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that has a lot to do with the distaste that people have for China and specifically the CCP. Not necessarily, of course, the Chinese people per se.
No.
But it also has to do with the contrast. If you think about South Korea, this was a country that was utterly destroyed, war-torn, as devastated as any European capitals of World War II. Particularly if you know anything about the Korean War. I mean, it's just... The war ranged over the entire Korean peninsula. Seoul was repeatedly artilleryed and bombed and shelled. They lost South Korean cities for months at a time to occupation. And at the end of that war, when the smoke cleared, the South Korea had a GDP on par with Kenya.
Wow.
And since then, is now one of the wealthiest, most vibrant, culturally interesting countries in the world.
Yeah.
China.
And exporting brilliance everywhere.
Exporting technology, but also their culture.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a really amazing thing. And it has a lot to do with the Korean people and what the decisions and choices they made. By the way, they were a dictatorship for quite a while after the Korean War. Effectively a dictatorship. They went through a lot of turmoil starting in the late 70s through the 80s. And then now they're a democracy. They are a thriving democracy. They evolved along with their economic progression, something that China has not done. If anything, China's moved backwards politically and sort of in their at least basic respect for human rights, and not so much beginning with their own people. Forget other people, beginning with their own people. And I think what you see is the sum total of people's irritation, frustration, and anger, not only with China, but their penetration, right, into other countries.
Taiwan.
And they haven't done it in the positive way that South Korea has done,
yeah,
sort of naturally and organically, but they've done it through subterfuge and, frankly, buying off people. And I guess people say they're buying off people that are prostitutes, and they're probably right, right? These are people that are already for sale, but... You know, this is a country in the last 2 years.
Now, are you talking about American corporations there? Or?
I'm talking about politicians, corporations,
right, I know.
Media across the board, university professors, sadly.
Yep.
through the auspices of the Confucian Society. If you don't know anything about that,
look it up. Yes.
It's gross. And these are people in the last 2 years have oppressed one of the coolest, most interesting cities in the world. That's Hong Kong, which is the last vestige of sort of free people and trade and capitalism in China. They broke their agreements there. They're in the process of oppressing them. Not that LeBron James will tell you that. And of course, you've got the genocide against the Uyghurs, where they have extermination through forced sterilization.
It's a genocide.
So, yeah, I mean it's a long play genocide, not the short play genocide where you just murder everyone. And you know, then of course you've got COVID, where it's increasingly looking like they created a bioweapon. Doesn't mean they released it on purpose. In fact, it's quite possible that it got out while they were doing biological warfare experimentation. But that's caused a little bit of a global tumult as well. And you know all this going in, and then you see, I saw the transcript of the IOC president, Thomas Bach, giving a speech about the host nation. And they're always supposed to be gracious, right? Any host nation, you're supposed to look at, obviously, the positives of the host and talk about their progress, etc. But the guy might as well have been a member of the CCP. And it was a gross speech. And it purposely didn't just gloss over a lot of this stuff, but it also basically praised the ruling party in China. And there's people at NBC actually confused as to why the ratings are so low, Kevin. And I can't understand how out of touch, how completely removed from reality that you have to be as a network media executive to actually ponder why people are pissed off at China.
Yeah, I honestly think they didn't realize this many people are aware of it. And because it is not, you know, it's not talked about enough. I mean, ESPN will like to talk about a lot of stuff. We don't hear that nearly enough, probably because of their ties to the NBA. And I think NBC kind of thought the same thing. I do think that's playing into it a lot. The other thing, too, is that we just had the Olympics 6 months ago, the more popular one. So you didn't have the better one, right? You didn't have that separation. I think that's a lot of it, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think really we took a little turn for the serious. So I'll just conclude by saying I think you have the right idea, Kevin, that they need to have Jeff Zucker take over and really clean house.
Hey, he's available. Bring him back to NBC. Bring him back.
He knows entertainment.
And let's get this thing going, man. Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is, too, for a TV company like that, you would think that if we're going to take that risk and that gamble, it's going to be on something we know is going to be profitable, right? And so it's just amazing you'd fall on the sword for that crap, which 6 months after, there's just not the appetite or the thirst or the appeal at all for people to go in, to throw in the fact that it's in China. And that's a recipe for the ratings they're getting.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I just think that there's a just a frustration amongst people. And a lot of that knowledge that you're talking about, Kevin, I think a lot of the credit goes to independent media.
Without a doubt, they're the only ones really hitting this and have been for years.
And we're at a point where it's not just Joe Rogan and all of his controversies and made up controversies as political hit jobs. But I mean, Russell Brand has a bigger audience on YouTube than CNN.
Yeah.
And by the way, I've watched a couple of his YouTube videos. He's all over the place. He's an interesting guy. He's always been pretty funny, in my opinion. He's actually more responsible in his reporting than what I see on the major stations in traditional media.
And it's also, let's point this out, he's not a reporter, so he should not be held up to that standard. So it says a lot if he's actually going above
exceeding
and beyond,
exceeding
what the real reporters should be doing.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, now he's an editorialist and a polemicist, but again, I think it would be difficult to say that what we call conventional media hasn't moved already to that place and sort of lost any objectivity. But yeah, I guess, I don't know, it's just something that was sort of on my mind, and you and I had just chatted about briefly offline, and I just, it's odd to me to encounter people in the national media superstructure, the people that are calling the shots, who are honestly shocked that their big investment to pay for the Winter Olympics isn't going to pay off for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of like surprised. Like, what's this about?
Yeah,
it's just crazy.
It goes to show you they're living in their own world, man. Picked up on that, but you had got in touch with me and said, man, the ratings are just incredibly low, and not a surprise for me. I guess I shouldn't be surprised that the brass at NBC is thinking, what?
Yeah, I know. It's just interesting. Anyway, we probably won't even talk about it again unless there's some glaring incident or something, but. Yeah, it's weird. It's the kind of stuff that I get fired up about the Olympics in general. Obviously, the Summer Olympics are way better, but I get fired up about the Olympics in general because I like the larger sporting ideal. I like the idea that Athens and Sparta could be at each other's throats, but their athletes could still have safe passage to compete in the games.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And anymore, particularly with population at so many levels occurring. And there's so many people like us who are just out, like, we're done. Like, I don't want to live this little well-intended lie anymore.
No. And here's the other thing. The IOC is completely complicit. I mean, the IOC is as dirty as FIFA or some of these organizations that the fact that they've given, I mean, hell, China's had two Olympics in what, 15, 16 years?
Yeah.
It's all about getting
IOC
paid.
The IOC is what happens when you internationalize bowl representatives.
That's exactly what it is. That's a great example, man. I like
same
that.
Assholes, good comparison. Different scale.
Right, exactly. But unfortunately, a lot more global shit at stake. So, yeah, it is. I'm completely put off by it. You know, I did mention I'm not going to watch any of it. I used to watch the half pipe. And I think Sean White did that last night. So I think the one that I would have watched, I missed.
Yeah. Well, you're just going to have to stick with the hash pipe.
You know what? I will. I will substitute the half pipe for the hash pipe tonight, and we'll get after it right there. Hey, we do have to give a lot of love to Texas basketball because you said, hey, this team has not been very watchable this year. I co-signed. We didn't get any shit for it because I think a lot of Texas fans know we love the team. We're not going to say that unless we – have seen it and really believe it. And I think they really believed it too. But man, that was more than watchable against Kansas. That was high level college basketball. I will call it out. I'll call it out when it's not good. That was really good basketball and a great win for that team.
Absolutely. Eminently watchable. There were heroes. You, of course, had Trey Mitchell taking it to the bank late in the game to cut the lead, the Kansas lead to one.
I love Trey. Trey, stop shooting threes, man.
Yeah. By the way, that Kevin and I were laughing before we got the podcast. That appeared to be the setup play by Beard on the out of bounds. And, Chris, maybe we could drop a different play there, buddy. There's a reason Trey Mitchell was open on that shot.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I know they set that up because McCormick's not going to extend and go guard him out there. But also Bill Self has no problem with McCormick not extending and putting a hand in Trey Mitchell's face. Mitchell, if you look at his numbers at UMass, actually wasn't that bad of a three-point shooter. It just hasn't been there this year. And we've seen him, and then at times, a little bit, we've seen Bishop try and extend a little bit. And I'm sure that's what they've been told by NBA people. Hey, with this new NBA, you're going to have to show that that you've got a little bit more range. And so they want to show that for them this year. But this is about winning basketball games for the University of Texas.
Speaking about extending themselves, how about the play in completely different sides of the court? But how about the play of Courtney Ramey and Timmy Allen?
Courtney Ramey was a player of the game. Timmy Allen's too. Courtney Ramey's a player of the game. And, man, it's a good example because he's been criticized for not being a good defender. And what we have found out is that's all want to with Courtney Ramey. When Courtney Ramey wants to shadow someone, he will. Now, Bill Self said they expected that to be the game plan, and so they were using him as a decoy. Whatever. The fact that you take away a possible Big 12 player of the year – and they were just all over him. Ramey specifically was all over him. That was great to see. I can watch that type of defense all night long.
Absolutely. Props to Courtney Ramey on that. And Timmy Allen, man, I got to say, you had mentioned this in our last podcast, that they're routing more of the offense through him. Clearly the case. And tell you what, he evidenced something that's been absent from the college game for Oh, 20 years?
The mid-range.
Kevin.
The
mid-range game.
Oh, he's got it, doesn't he? Timmy Allen. Timmy Allen would have fit in any era.
He was 11 of 17 from the floor. The rest of his teammates shot 34%. 24 points, 9 boards. Big ball baskets down the stretch when it looked like Kansas might put it away once again. And Timmy Allen, man, with some Kobe Bryant-esque mid-range game.
No, yes, he's fantastic. He's got the 15, 17-footer. He can drive. And as we've said, he can also initiate the offense. So it's great whenever he's starting the offense and he can either initiate for other people or get that easy mid-range look. I mean, he is their most complete player right now. Got to give Christian Bishop a lot of love. Bishop had 10 rebounds, and there was 10 big boy rebounds. And this is where really the philosophy and the mentality that Beard wants to have this team and wants the identity of this team to be is tough and physical. And Kansas is tough and physical. And you've got McCormick and some of those guys. Texas was able to answer that. And initially in that game, not getting into the paint, they very quickly realized, no, we've got to get into the paint, and they were also going to have to get some big-time rebounds, and Bishop had some of those, man. I thought it was his best game rebounding, considering
he sure did.
Who he's rebounding against.
That was the key. You know, it's one thing to be a dog and yell when you pull down a rebound against San Jose State. It's another thing to do it against a bunch of dudes at KU who are outstanding. And, you know, the last few years at KU, they physically have gotten more and more imposing.
Yep.
As a basketball team under Self. And boy, Texas matched their physicality and really exceeded their intensity, which is saying something. And Self was highly complimentary of Beard and the team after the game.
Yeah, he was. He was asked about this being a signature win. And anytime you beat Kansas, that is it's a big time win. It's a top three program all time in college basketball. So, you know, I don't care what Kansas team it is, but this is a top 10 Kansas team. But Beard or Self said, he said, look, he's going to have a lot more of these here. You can tell he respects Beard a lot. Texas has now beaten Kansas in basketball 3 straight times. Never thought I would have seen that.
If only we could beat their football team.
I know. I'm on Twitter. I got it.
Yeah. well, hey, look, a guy that's unbeatable, both on and off the court, because Gabe Winslow used to be a high school basketball player. A high quality one at that one, apparently.
Uh-oh.
Or at least according to him, Kevin. We
right.
all like to embellish our high school accomplishments.
So that means he was a seventh guy, huh?
Yeah, apparently he was a good player.
I believe that.
Gabe has got game, and he's got game in the game that most matters to you, the listener. That's the mortgage game. If you need some help with that regard, you need to reach out to him at 832-557-1095 or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. I've been talking to you guys a little bit. You know, whatever your service need with your mortgage or whatever you're looking at, whether you're buying a house or want to refi, there's a lot of things and a lot of structures and creativity that he can find to help you and make things work. Or conversely, he'll just tell you, this isn't a good idea. Let's not do this right now. But one thing you can do, if you're in a specific jumbo market and you're looking at ways to take out some equity and put it to work, whether to invest in your business, invest in a company or a stock, or invest in real estate, which is a pretty good hedge against inflation, and when that ain't going away anytime soon, this is a great time to tap into that equity and talk to Gabe about how we can do it in a way that's going to be painless and really increase your net worth over the next 5 to 10 years. Give him a call, 832-557-1095, or go to mortgagesbygabe.com. Very, very sharp guy, extremely ethical. And just give him a call, like bounce your, you know, see what's available, listen to his good ideas, throw out your ideas, and see if there's a play there that's going to help your net worth and make you a more prosperous and more happy person.
He's the man, definitely the man. Quickly to wrap up here on Texas basketball. So you got Baylor on Saturday. Baylor's a top 10 team. You've got two more against Baylor. You got one more against Kansas. You got one more against Tech. And it goes to show you just how much, especially with the poor non-conference schedule, Texas is just making their – I mean, everything's right in front of them. So if they finish off well, they could be a 3 seed, right? I saw them as a 4 seed after the Kansas win. But because that non-conference really in there, it's all in front of them. And we said that at the beginning of the year. We said, you know, the good thing about their schedule is that they can make up all that in the Big 12. And it looked like for a little while that wasn't going to happen. But we knew this five-game stretch of Tennessee, Tech, Iowa State, Kansas, Baylor was going to tell a lot. And they're 3-1 in that right now. So, I would love to get a dub somehow Saturday morning against Baylor. You do that and you're sitting in a good spot. But this team is coming together and they're cutting a lot better offensively. Just feeling a lot better about it. And just for our eyeballs, I mean, that was a fun game to watch. That was a fun college basketball game to watch. It's funny, I made my comment, and I've been picking and choosing. I watched Houston SMU trying to find games that I know that I would like, and I've had like 3 or 4 in a row that have been really fun college basketball games. So, hey, like I've always said, when it's good, I'll give it love. When it's bad, I'll crap on it.
So if Texas goes 2-2 in the remaining Big Four, right? Kansas, Baylor times two, Texas Tech. What is that? Is that a 3 seed?
Probably. I mean, it depends on what's around it, but the Big 12 is getting a lot of love. So, yeah, I mean, I think Texas could be in that top 4 range, which would be fantastic.
That's awesome. But I got nothing else on basketball. You want to talk Super Bowl or you want to talk Brian Harsin and Auburn?
Let's get into the Super Bowl right here because this is going to be pretty interesting. We've never seen anyone – never been a team that's given up 50-plus sacks that has gotten – or with one quarterback has gotten sacked that many times and gotten to the Super Bowl. I mean, the Bengals, they could have lost every single playoff game they've played, but there's something about this team right now. And I talk about how easy it is to rebuild offensive lines if you do it correctly. I think Kansas City and the Colts have definitely shown that. You know, they're a draft or free agency away from – all of a sudden being a really, really damn good team. And I say that as their Sunday, they've got a chance to win a Super Bowl. I'm excited about this. I mean, the Rams, talent-wise, are a better team all the way through. One of the things the Rams don't do well is they don't deal with the screen game that well. And if you look at the screen game that Zach Taylor has really used with the Bengals, it's pretty impressive, man. I mean, it's high-level slip screen stuff. And they've got a lot of different variations, and I think that's going to be a way for them to try and slow down what is going to be a really tough pass rush with Donald and Von Miller and those guys getting after it. So I'm curious to see how Zach Taylor's going to try and fight around his offensive line and just how bad it is because he's been able to do it essentially the whole second half of the year and certainly in the playoffs. And on the flip side, you know, Matt Stafford, everything's in front of him. If Matt Stafford wins this game, he's going to the Hall of Fame. How about that?
Wow. I didn't. So, okay.
He's got the numbers, man. He's got the numbers.
I didn't know about, first of all, the vulnerability of the Rams to the screen game. And I know the Bengals are decent at it, but I didn't know that. That's something to watch. I learned something there. The Hall of Fame statement, you're right.
Right. I mean, and I'm not saying that as a Matt Stafford fan, like, you got to put him in. I'm telling you, just on the outside with no dog in the fight, if he wins his game, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it tells you how much the Super Bowl is a stamp on your career.
Right, and you got to remember, he racked up, he's top 5, top 10, and a lot of those numbers where you just, over time, pile up.
Yeah, well, Stafford also racked up a lot of numbers late third quarter, fourth quarter, coming back from 24-point deficits.
Right.
When the other team put in prevent in Detroit,
yep.
Right?
And you got to throw.
Man, that is so interesting. Talk about, like, makes you realize the degree to which we can be kind of simpletons with the Super Bowl and the quarterback, right?
No doubt. Joe and Phil Necro.
Yes, Necro.
Just like them, Necros, the Necros.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a line. You know, no one's going to put Jeff Hostetler in the Hall of Fame, or Doug Williams, even who was an above average to good quarterback in his prime. But holy cow, Joe Namath! If you look at the numbers, and yeah, it saved me on the knee injuries and all that. I get it. I'm talking about the actual career the guy had. It ain't real good, but it was the Super Bowl, man, and it was a very charismatic, telegenic, huge upset, and it just sealed a Hall of Fame career.
It absolutely did. The other thing with that screen game, and was going through it today, just the different types of screens they run. I mean, they'll run, it's like Tom Osborne. They'll run the same play, but run it 4 different ways with 4 different formations and just little variations, little different looks that can cause either false steps or lazy steps or late second steps. The linebackers for the Rams don't give a shit about linebackers. Like, you can go through their personnel and what they spend, and they're just not going to – they're like the Cowboys with safeties. We're not going to invest in it. And in the screen game especially, you better have some linebackers that can play that well. That's something the Niners really had working for them, where they've invested in their linebackers. So I'm just kind of curious how all that plays out. They're going to have to get Joe Mixon going as well. I think some of that will be with the screen game, but they're going to have to be able to find ways to run the football a little bit. And then I can't wait to see Jalen Ramsey and Ja'Marr Chase. That's a hell of a matchup.
Another hell of a matchup, maybe not quite as close in talent and ability level as Ja'Marr Chase and Jalen Ramsey, is Trey Hopkins versus Aaron Donald.
Yeah, I am so proud of Trey Hopkins.
I am so glad you said that, because that's how I feel too.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to sound like a dad whose kid was, you know, in remedial reading, and now all of a sudden they've got a pretty good job, and I just can't believe he's gotten to this level. And it says a lot about him. It also says a lot about the coaching Texas was getting back then.
Well, so Trey, to just remind everyone, he left Texas after multiple years as a starter on the offensive line, got in the NFL in 2014. He was an undrafted free agent. He moved around. He got bounced. He got cut. He got put on taxi squads. He ended up building a 7-8-year NFL career.
And unbelievable.
He's now a starter for the Bengals.
Yeah.
And he's going to be going against the best interior defensive lineman in the NFL. Maybe one day considered the greatest interior defensive lineman in NFL history.
And you could argue the best player pound for pound in the NFL right now, and has been for 5 years.
But if Trey can even hang in there with Aaron, he's going to be one of these secret, unheralded heroes of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Totally agree with that. I mean, the Bengals' pass protection against the Rams is going to be such a big deal. You've got Hakeem, what is it, Adingy, Jackson Carmen. You know, they've kind of been rotating at guard to go right next to Hopkins. That whole interior, they're just going to have to hold up, and that's what it is. That's what I've been saying all playoffs with them, just hold up. I didn't think they would, and they've been able to do enough. But, man, Joey Cool, you know, his escapability is different. He's a much better athlete than people think, and he's just slippery.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, interesting fact about Trey, 61 NFL starts.
Are you serious? He's got 61?
61 starts, and in fact, he got extended on his contract in 2019, and he got a 3-year 20 mil. So Trey Hopkins not only is earned significant capital in the NFL pension, which is no joke, he's got a 3-year $20 million contract to cap off, you know, what's going to be the end of his career, right? However much longer he's able to play.
Good for him, man.
This dude has, through grit, effort, perseverance, like, crafted a generationally changing level of wealth for him and his family, and that is awesome.
It really is. No, that's as good as those stories get right there. So, yeah, I'll definitely be proud of him, proud of Andrew Beck and the award he just earned for being such a good guy in the NFL. There have been stories like that, Texas guys that – you never would have thought they would have lasted that long in the NFL, and they do, and they just, you know, they kind of surprise all of us, which probably for us Texas fans makes it even more frustrating.
Yeah, exactly right.
So I'm taking the Rams in this, but for all you Bengals fans, man, you know, you said it last week, I'm not really sure who I'll be rooting for. I'll kind of figure out, probably you'd be one of those, like you said, that once a game gets going, I'll feel it. I'll certainly have no problem with either team winning, but I'll take the Rams in this, but I've also picked against the Bengals every single week in the postseason. So take my pick for what it's worth.
Are these two teams two of the NFL teams with the least fan imprint nationally?
Nationally, yes. Now, the Bengals have some good fans. The Rams are the ones that you just don't know how serious people in LA take them. Obviously they were in LA when we were kids, and they go to St. Louis, then they come back. So that alone, you're going to lose some people. I mean, I would say if the Rams would have stayed in LA that whole time, then I would say the Rams, but no, I mean, the Rams don't have a national feel. I mean, the national feel is in this order for me: Cowboys, Steelers. I tell you what, I've been really surprised how many national Niners fans there are. I think that's what happens when you, you know, don't win the entire 30 years, but you've got like a 30-year, 40-year span. You stay in the same city, and you've got really brandable guys like Montana and Young and Rice, and you go through it. But 49ers have gotten a little bit more national.
Yeah, the Patriots have become.
Patriots, obviously.
The Chiefs and the Broncos, if you go to the Midwest and sort of the Rocky Mountain states, so if you go to the lesser populated states, the Seattle had a little run, but it's often like the Broncos are kind of a default if you're living in Boise, Idaho.
Right.
It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and then obviously we didn't mention the Raiders. The Raiders have always kind of had that weird bad boy. I mean, there's a good chance Raider fan may try and mug you, but they're in all 50 states.
Well, they have a national fan base. There's no question. And putting them in Vegas is perfect because it really allows what has become a national fan base to sort of just travel there and sort of visit the Raiders wherever it is you're from. And you wear your dorky Raider gear and you paint your face and put spikes on your shoulder pads and have the Raider experience. And I've been to a Raiders game. I went there with my brother-in-law and in Oakland. Let me tell you, it was an experience, Kevin.
It's an experience. There's no question about that. Hey, some injuries here. Tyler Higbee, the tight end for the Rams, probably not going to play with a knee injury. That could be huge. And then the other tight end, CJ Uzomah for the Bengals, same injury, and I think he is going to play.
Interesting. Yeah, Uzomah, I think, is the more valuable of the two to the offense.
I agree, but don't undercount Higbee. Uzoma's a better player, but Higbee's really important for what McVay wants to do with that.
I think you're probably right. I just think Cooper Kupp is going to get 15 targets. I just think they're going to just route it through him, and then I think they're going to run the ball because the Bengals can't stop the run very well.
True. Andrew Whitworth playing in his 40s. He actually he was with the Bengals for the first 11 years, and he played forever.
So I've heard that Whitworth is basically one of these guys that gets up very slowly and makes noises and like walks gingerly around everywhere.
Oh, he looks old.
Suit him up on Sunday.
Yeah.
He's a tackle.
He looks old. And then have you seen the Eric Weddle story? Remember Eric Weddle, the white safety from Utah, I believe?
Of course, yeah. Weddle's a very good player.
Right, been playing forever. So he had retired. And McVay reached out to him and was like, hey, man, we need help. Do you want to come back and play? And so Weddle had stayed in good enough shape, and Weddle's now, you know, a win away from coming back after retirement and winning a Super Bowl. It's gonna be a little tougher for him because he was able to play that kind of physical, instinctive box safety role last game against the Niners because of what the Niners want to do. This is going to be a little bit more space to cover for him, but that's another good story in this thing, the fact that he came back.
You know, interesting thing about the two teams and talking about multiple ways to skin a cat. No offense intended, Kevin. I know you love cats.
Yeah, because I'm not an asshole and I don't believe in terrorizing something. So continue, Paul. You're making a case for yourself.
The two teams completely built differently. The Rams bought all their stars. They sold off their drafts. They paid top dollar in free agency, and they built basically kind of an all-star team, and then they just got a few random dudes, as you said, the linebackers, right? And then you got the Bengals, who grew everything, at least on offense, organically.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of those guys was drafted.
Yeah.
And even their offensive lineman, Hopkins, was originally, you know, undrafted free agent to Cincinnati. Chase, draft pick. Burrow, draft pick. Higgins, Boyd, every single Mixon, all those guys, homegrown. Now, that's partly because the Browns are the Brown family, not the Brown team. The Brown family's a bunch of cheapskates, right?
Yeah, they don't really have a whole setup, Paul.
What's that?
They don't really have like this extensive setup of all these draft people. I was actually reading a story about them the other day. The Brown family is...
It's a family business.
Yeah. It's like the old car, you know. It's like, oh, we have an old insurance business.
Yeah, it's mom and pop.
That's crazy.
It's mom and pop.
Yeah, because...
No question.
Because the daughter writes the checks, apparently.
Yeah, that's right. And so you contrast that. Rams, who with McVay have all sorts of advanced stuff and metrics. And they're just like, hey, man, if you think you've got a window, you bet everything you can on high impact players. Are you worried about paying, you know, Donald? Are you worried about paying Ramsey? Are you worried about paying for Stafford and bringing him in? No, just live for today. We'll pay the bill some other time because we have a chance to win a Super Bowl. So completely different ways to roster build. I don't know if even both are vindicated, but I do think the point is that people in the NFL and in sports in general tend to think that there is the one way to do it. And there's really a lot of ways to do it. You just need to do it well within that way.
Yeah, that's true for most things in life, isn't it? I mean, there are ways to do it. You've got to kind of know you and know what you excel at and then go from there. Now, this is going to be a little different because it's not just you individually. But yeah, I mean, there are different ways to build the team, and that's a great point. They've done this differently. You know, Cincinnati actually has tried to invest in the offensive line. They've just missed.
Yeah, they've just missed. The way that they've sort of hit on every skill player, they've missed almost on every offensive lineman.
Exactly. The Jonah Williams of the world. And Trey Hopkins is actually a great story because, as you mentioned, that's a UDFA and he's been able to hang around. But watch out when Cincinnati is able, it's much easier to retool that. I mentioned the Colts and the Chiefs. If you do that right and you mix in the draft and free agency, and you can turn that around in a year, definitely 2 years, but just improve it in a year enough to where they've got those skill position guys and they've got Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase. You know, let's not forget Joseph Osai will be back next year too.
Yeah, that is awesome. And apparently he was a guy that they loved before his injury.
They were in love with him.
I am eager to see Joseph Osai out there.
Yeah, I think he was going to start.
No question he was going to start.
I'm having some Bill Schoening moments. I've belched a couple times on the air. Have you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, was wondering. Yeah. You got a little gassy.
Because I made this lasagna. God, I make good lasagna, man. I nail my lasagna. I ate way too much for lunch, and I realized it when I was walking around today and just doing stuff, and I was like, man, I'm kind of getting gassy here. And you get older, man. You start getting that acid reflux and shit like that. Getting old sucks, man.
It does. I'm a little bit ahead of you, so I've already gone down that ground. You gotta keep fighting. You gotta battle the long defeat. It all ends in the same place, Kevin.
Yeah, I know it does. I wanna delay the inevitable if I can, but I apologize. You guys have probably caught. I called it the Bill Schoening because when I used to intern for Bill Schoening could drink about 4 or 5 Diet Pepsis a show. And he would get just all this carbonation built up, and then he'd be making a point, and you kind of hear it on the air much more than mine was there. And you just hear, just, excuse me, sorry about that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've heard of the cough button. They had a burp button.
There you go, man. There you go.
Hey, man, we got to hit this. And one thing you're not going to hit, unlike your lasagna, are these prop bets. And they're getting increasingly ludicrous. And may I say, increasingly gameable. Okay? We've got prop bets for the color of Mickey Guyton's outfit, the number of planes during the flyover, will an artist omit a word during the national anthem, what is going to be the total number of times they show a celebrity in the stands, who's going to be the first coach shown during the first national anthem. Hey, Kevin, every single one of these things, aside from being a stupid bet, is gameable. What's to prevent a cameraman, a producer, someone who's involved with the actual production of the Super Bowl or any of the events from getting a buddy in Vegas to lay a bunch of prop bets and then making sure exactly what they need to happen happens?
I've been asking that for a long time. I mean, the national anthem, can't you time that during rehearsal?
There is a prop bet on the over-under for how long free in the land of the free lasts. And if it's under 4.5 seconds is the over-under. As a recording artist, Can you not just determine what that will be and make a smooth $1 million through a couple of bets through friends?
Yes, you would think so. No, I know. I'm sure they've got a way to regulate this and keep an eye on it. But yeah, there's definitely a way to game this.
Okay, well, bets are no doubt. You look at volume. You look at bets that are, you know, if you've got $700,000 of volume on one stupid prop and someone puts down $2 million, that's going to draw scrutiny. What's to prevent you from gaming $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 at a time?
Yeah, that's a good question, man. Really good question. Look, Vegas is usually on top of that stuff, so I'm sure they've figured out some way to combat that. But, yeah, we had our betting guy on last year, and I asked him about that. He said, well, he goes, I think Vegas, you know, it keeps a close eye on it, but I'm not sure you could keep an eye on everything there.
Well, I mean,
especially if that person's involved in it. I mean, because that person could say, hey, I told my friend about the rehearsal. You know, that's not – I didn't do anything wrong.
I mean, they've got props on, will Eminem perform in a Lions uniform? Will Snoop Dogg be in a Steelers uniform? These are things that these recording artists can control.
Yeah, right.
Oh. I don't know, man.
No, it's interesting.
I'm so disillusioned by these prop bets, Kevin.
What other prop bets really stand out to you? Because those two actually seem somewhat normal, as crazy as it is.
Will Al Michaels or Chris Collinsworth say spread or total numbers? Yes, plus 250. No, minus 400. I can tell you right now, Al Michaels will reference the spread. He always does.
Yeah, but will he do it directly? I guess he can now. I mean, he's been doing it.
He always does.
Right. He used to do it a lot more indirectly. Musburger used to as well, because it wasn't as cool to actually say that on the air. Well, it was cool. It just was the networks weren't really cool with it, and the leagues weren't really cool with it. But now that the marriage is there and the facade has gone away, yeah, these guys usually will nail the line, actually give it to you. So yeah, I'd vote yes on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got DraftKings, we've got an NFL team in Vegas, and we've got pretty much, I mean, guaranteed sports betting. They've gotten past all their line bullshit and artifice. So, yeah, dude, who will be shown first as an NFL player in image or highlight? Boomer Esiason, plus 110.
Boomer!
Oh, they put Eric Dickerson, plus 1,200, and they misspelled Eric. They spelled Eric with a K.
Wow.
That's disrespect.
Well, Eric's always come off as a good guy. I know. No, he hadn't. My guess would be Boomer, because I think the Bengals is the bigger story.
Yeah, I guess so.
It's been 1988, man.
The Bengals have been to two Super Bowls?
Yeah, two. Both against the Niners.
Crazy. Yeah. So the one was Boomer, and the other's with was that Ken Anderson and like
there
Pete
go.
Johnson.
There you go, all over it, you old man.
That's a deep pull. Hey, I was a little ass kid when that happened.
No, that's actually really damn impressive, dude.
You know how when you're a kid, you can remember weird random facts that just make an impression on you.
Yeah, and then you'll still remember it. I mean, there's stuff I remember today from being 5, 6, or 7 and just getting into sports that. And yet, there's something that I'm more into that happened 3 years ago, but I can't remember it.
Well, you know how much I mock baseball and try to degrade it and minimize it as much as possible. And I had a book when I was a little kid of baseball greats and their statistics. And so I used to read it and memorize the stats. And so I'm a grown man who doesn't really watch baseball, and I still know Lou Gehrig's lifetime batting average. That's weird, right?
That's really weird, especially for you. But
yeah.
I love the way you sit there and mock baseball and your son's favorite sport, the sport that you're going to be dragged to every single day or almost every day, is, of course, baseball. Life's funny
that
way.
I'm working on that, and I'm trying to get him interested in wrestling.
Oh,
because
God.
One, wrestling is a great sport. Two, these Bay Area kids are soft, bro. I went to a birthday party, brought my son to a birthday party, and it was out in a park. And the mom who was coordinating it, to her credit, had all sorts of great traditional games like potato sack races. She had a tug of war,
nice.
A competitive tug of war, Kevin.
Nice.
They made these kids physically compete against each other. How outrageous.
Now, did they have masks on?
Well, half of the kids were masked in an outdoor park. I don't want to get into that, but...
I'm just asking, man.
Pull some studies on PubMed and look at the relative risk of COVID for children under the age of 10, as well as outdoor spread and proliferation. Might be informative for some of those parents.
Dude, I feel bad for these kids, because I would not have I just would not have followed through with that very much. I know me as a kid because, well, I was in my
my son's gotten in trouble and disciplined for taking off his mask.
Yes, I would have gotten in trouble a lot. And half the time would have been because I meant to, and the other half the time I just would have forgot.
Yeah. Well, hey, back to these soft ass kids. So we set up these games at the birthday party at the park, and every kid that, you know, a natural potato sack race, there's going to be kids falling. There's going to be mayhem. The tug of war, of course, one side falls, right, when they finally lose and they all fall on each other. Multiple kids crying at the conclusion of every event.
Okay. Because they lost?
From falling to the ground.
Okay.
I used to deliberately antagonize my brother to the point where he and his friends would pummel me and beat the shit out of me because I was bored, and that was more amusing to me than watching a stupid show or just being bored. and I didn't cry. I just sort of said whatever and then moved on, right? I used to jump off of my roof when I was 8 years old, get a running start and leap off of my roof and try to do rolls, and inevitably split my lip, bite through my tongue, twist my ankle. I wouldn't say I like gutted through it. I certainly had tears in my eyes, but once I recovered, I got back on the roof.
Well, let me just say there's got to be probably a happy middle from Paul Rambo Waddlington as a kid and some of the soft asses that are crying right now because they fell to the ground.
That's where wrestling comes in.
Okay. Because I wouldn't advise kids to be jumping off their roof or to be antagonizing your older brother to the point where you get the shit beaten out of you.
Hey, kids, if you're listening to a podcast, if you're listening to this podcast and you're a kid, go up to your older brother right now and just smack the shit out of him.
Don't. Do it. Don't.
And go outside right after you do it. Get up on the roof and jump off.
God. I had two older cousins, and I would pull that with my sister, and my sister would slap the crap out of me. She was 9 years older, too, so when I was real young, she could handle me. But I had two older cousins. I spent all my summers in Chicago, and I would mess with them, and they would make sure that whatever I didn't get throughout the rest of the year, I got toughened up that summer. I mean, I remember
probably a couple of Chicago hockey kids, right?
Oh God, no, they were more North Side, but kids were just tougher back then, so they had no problem wailing on me, and I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm glad I don't have a real older brother.
I'm bummed they weren't hockey guys because I just had a brief image of the Hanson brothers from Slapshot. Hey, Coach! If you guys haven't seen Slapshot, it is a incredible sports movie and has some of the funniest scenes ever in any movie. But
only seen part of it. I've only seen part of it.
The Hanson brothers are epic.
That's one of them. I need to see the whole thing, man. That's on the giant list of me to actually finish off a movie.
And Paul Newman, by the way, is awesome in that movie. Not surprising, he's a great actor, but he's a great comedic actor in it as well.
All right, you want to get to Brian Harsin here?
Yeah, let's talk about Brian Harsin. And before we move on, I want to talk to you folks who might be moving on, whether that's moving houses somewhere in the Centex area or house. And, maybe you're just going to travel around like a hobo and live off the earnings that you've gotten in this inflated market. If you want to do that, you need to talk to Laura Baker. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. She is a award-winning member of the Andy Allen team of Keller Williams. She's really good at what she does. And just give her a call, 512-784-0505. The level of realtor and the competence of the realtor that you hire will have a significant impact on your mental stress, the brain damage you experience in this process, as well as the final number, how much you make or how much you have to spend. And it's worth your time to hire the best and work with the best. Reach out to her and see if she can help comps and no pressure.
She's awesome. And we've had a couple people that have recently that have worked with her and have just given a huge thumbs up. So I give you crap a lot, but the fact that she's your sister, that means that the IQ is probably similar, but the emotional part's a little bit better. That's what I'm guessing.
She has much higher emotional intelligence, no question about that.
Yes, most women do. All right, let's get to this.
Absolutely true.
Let's get to this Brian Harsin story. So you weren't very familiar with this, were you?
I wasn't. You put it on my radar, and then I did some Googles And I'm still as confused, but it's Southern type stuff going on after their first year coach gets hired against some objections and has a losing season, including a 5-game losing streak to end the season.
Yeah, I think it all starts with a 5-game losing streak. And then he hires Austin Davis as his offensive coordinator. He joined the staff in December, is an NFL guy who's actually coming from the Seattle Seahawks. And he got in there and then about a week ago just resigned and said, I have to leave. It's for personal reasons. So God knows what that is. But clearly, I mean, you make that hire, then you're thinking, okay, well, what's going on? Derek Mason, the DC, took about $300,000 to $400,000 less money to go be the DC at Oklahoma State. So something internally is going on. And then that's where I'm going to try and be careful with this because, look, I have no idea what the hell really happened. And most people on Twitter, like 99.9%, don't. But definitely the Twitterverse and the Auburn message boards were at least talking about a rumor to where it could be a former Boise State cheerleader who was then working at Boise State who came with that whole crew to Auburn, that maybe there could be something, an affair going on there. I don't think that would stop. Look, I mean, if that is the case, and I have no idea, then that wouldn't stop. That hadn't stopped a lot of programs if a guy is winning. I think it has more to do with the 5-game losing streak, Davis and the way that thing played out, Derek Mason leaving to take less money for certainly at least a lateral move, kind of what's going on internally, and that would be a way for Auburn to not have to pay out if that is the case. But he was at SEC coaching, I guess, media days or coaches conference, whatever it is today, and got in and got out, didn't talk to anyone. It felt like this thing was going to be done and he was going to be fired over the weekend, but that hadn't happened yet. So maybe they're trying to collect as much information as possible, but it's not looking good for old Brian Harsin at Auburn.
It feels like two things are happening at once. One, he's mismanaged the program. He also fired the wide receivers coach, Cornelius Williams, 4 games into the season.
I didn't know that. Wow.
So in addition to all the other things you mentioned, and the Derek Mason thing, that's damning, right? But at the same time, that can also be true while Auburn is running basically a witch hunt because they made a bad hire and they're trying to get rid of him without having to pay an $8 million relief clause.
No doubt. I mean,
no doubt. A weird place.
So he took a $400,000 pay cut to go to Oklahoma State. Whatever it is, I don't think I didn't think it was a good fit to begin with. You can go back to the pod when we talked. It just felt weird from day one. And it's not even about whether I think he's a good coach or not. Paul, that be careful when you get guys from Boise State, Cincinnati, Houston, to where, as Paul calls them, program builders or kingmakers?
Kingmakers, yeah.
It's not going to last. The other thing, too, is that with Auburn's that chick who looks in the mirror and thinks she's a 10, but she's really a 5 or a 6.
Well, if you ever go on Instagram and just peruse around, there's quite a lot of that in society right now.
Yes, guys and girls.
Guys and girls.
No question. So I don't know how this is going to all play out, but it's should be intriguing. Hey, I should ask you about this. There were also rumors that maybe Texas was going to go after David Cutcliffe. I have not been following it as closely as I used to because I don't have to right now, but I don't think that happened yet. What about David Cutcliffe as an administrative assistant or, an analyst?
I mean, look, that's an Arch Manning play, right?
Of course it is. David Cutcliffe's a really good quarterback's coach.
He has a very good reputation as a quarterback's coach, and I think it's well-earned, and the Mannings believe in that guy at a level that it's hard to describe, right? And he sort of built a quarterback guru Rasputin-type hold over the Manning family, and for good reason. The people that have gone under his tutelage have prospered. And so if we go for Cutcliffe, that's clearly a play for Arch Manning. You can't read it any other way. That said, could he also be helpful for other quarterbacks? Absolutely. I mean, he's a coach. He's going to coach everybody. He's not just there to try to lure in Arch Manning. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if that's going to actually happen. But, certainly Sarkisian learned the Nick Saban transitional or retired football coach sort of tricks that Alabama used, and there's no reason Texas can't use it as well.
No doubt. Here's a guy who's not going to trick you at all. He's going to shoot you straight, and it's going to help out. It's already helped out a lot of our listeners. That is David McClellan. He is a fiduciary financial advisor. He's from Forum Financial. He specializes in financial life coaching, but also retirement planning. He's seen every angle of this business and has been doing a hell of a job at Forum. And he's part of the family, so he's going to give you a free consultation if you're part of the family. You're probably asking, well, am I part of the family? Well, you're listening to the podcast, so yeah, you're part of the family. Just tell him that you listen and that you'd like that free consultation. With that, he's going to kind of look at where you're at, maybe where you want to go, and some things you could be doing differently to build your wealth, achieve financial freedom faster. That's what we're all trying to do. That is the rat race that we're all looking at, and that financial freedom number is so key. So figure out what that is. How do I get there? How do I get there quicker? And David will give you a free consultation, just like Gabe and Laura. I mean, one of the great things about it is they're all doing well. And so they've got clients, and there's no desperation there. They're just part of this family. So if it doesn't work out for you, it doesn't work out for them, no hard feelings. And you can always say, hey, I learned something, and at least I gave it a shot. But there's a good chance they can help you out, and David is certainly one of those guys. Give him a shout. He works with everyone, even though he does have the Bob Dunn 312 Chicago area code. 312-933-8823. 312-933-8823. Or you can email him. Lots of people have. dmcclellan@forumfin.com. What do you want to wrap with here, brother?
Just wanted to say, David actually posted a really interesting link at Inside Texas underneath the last show, which was about IRA accounts. And are they actually ticking tax time bombs?
Really?
So, oh, yeah. And okay. He makes some very interesting, very compelling arguments. And if you're not as sophisticated as that, I think it might be an interesting and worthy discussion, particularly if you're getting closer to retirement and you're looking at how to structure your optimal retirement in terms of tax brackets and required distributions and all those things that David knows a ton about. And it's very difficult for even a relatively financially savvy person alone.
No doubt. No doubt. So, yeah, we love our family. Make sure you utilize them. Thanks for everyone who's been listening. Rate, review, subscribe. That'll help us out. Spread the word that that we've got a good podcast and we like to have fun with it. And also,
how about an above-average podcast? Let's not oversell.
Above average. Good point. Also, the 1-0 podcast with Joe Cook and Brad Kellner. Joe and BK do a great job, and they'll give you a bunch of Longhorn stuff as well. And they're part of the Everyone Gets a Trophy family. So check them out, man. And we appreciate everyone listening.